as the delegates at the Democratic National Convention today cast their votes for president, delegates for Bernie Sanders are expected to get to vote for him and not acclaim Hillary Clinton the nominee, at least at first. The promise to allow the vote was made by Sanders himself last night, even as he took the stage in Philadelphia to strongly endorse Hillary Clinton. Sanders' address came right after the keynote speech by Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. WBUR's Fred Tice sat with the Massachusetts delegation for the speeches and has this report.
Each of the speakers took on a distinct role for the night's final speeches. Bernie Sanders' role was to rally his supporters around Hillary Clinton. Elizabeth Warren gave the keynote address. That's usually a speech meant to inspire. Think Barack Obama in 2004, when he said there were no red states and no blue states, only the United States. But Warren used her speech to go after Donald Trump.
Democrats proposed ending tax breaks for corporations that ship jobs overseas. And Republicans, they said no. Democrats proposed raising the minimum wage, and Republicans, they said no. So to every Republican in Congress who said no, this November, the American people are coming for you.
She's been kind of the pit bull against Donald Trump all along.
Former State Senator Carol Donovan of Woburn, a Clinton delegate, appreciated Warren's speech.
I thought it was, in volume, it was tamed down tonight, so it played well to the keeping everything in a civil tone tonight. But she hit all the bright points that she had to hit as far as everything that's wrong with him.
In addition to that, Congresswoman Catherine Clark appreciated Warren's strong support for Hillary Clinton.
She really captured pulling together, I think, the Democratic Party behind our nominee and making sure that we all understand that these are the values that we share and highlighting the stark contrast with Donald Trump.
The big event of the night was Bernie Sanders' attempt to rally his supporters behind Clinton.
Based on her ideas and her leadership, Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States.
That's fine with Sanders supporter Naman Kanani, who's a delegate from Shrewsbury. He says he's happy, though, that Sanders did not release his delegates to vote for Clinton.
And that's just to show support for the revolution. We know that obviously he's not going to be elected to office, but we want to make sure that there's some accountability on Hillary's end, that these agreements that they've come to will continue to be promised as she moves along with her campaign.
For some, lingering in the hall as others rushed out into the night, it was a bittersweet moment. For Sanders delegate Nancy Weinberg of Newberry, for example.
I'm a little teary. So it's been a long campaign and a passionate campaign. And it's disappointing to have it end like this. And then.
So what now?
Now we defeat Trump. I need a hug from this man.
This man standing next to her was Jim Roosevelt, grandson of FDR, co-chair of the Rules Committee, and a superdelegate for Clinton.
I thought tonight was a great coming together of this Democratic Party. And I thought it was capped by an excellent speech by Bernie Sanders.
It was not all coming together. At one point, Clinton and Sanders delegates from Massachusetts, like delegates from other states, competed for who could shout their candidate's name loudest. But the delegates here do seem ready to come together, if only to defeat Trump. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Fred Tice at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Among the people party leaders are counting on to unify the Democratic Party at its convention in Philadelphia this week is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. She made her pitch last night with one of the primetime speeches, right after First Lady Michelle Obama and just before Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Warren made the case for a Hillary Clinton presidency, and in a move that's becoming a specialty for her, lobbed some of the toughest verbal bombs at Donald Trump.
Trump's entire campaign is just one more late night Trump infomercial. Hand over your money, your jobs, your children's future, and the great Trump hot air machine will reveal all the answers. And for one low, low price. He'll even throw in a goofy hat.
That was a funny line. Joining us now is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, who's part of our team covering the Democrats' convention in Philadelphia this week. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Bob.
So Elizabeth Warren was part of the star-studded evening of Democrats last night. Give us a further sense of her speech, her role, and what she said.
Well, Warren had a couple of roles last night. You know, first, she preceded Bernie Sanders. So in a sense, she was kind of a warm-up act for him. She appeals to many of his most progressive supporters. And so she really delivered a kind of populist argument in support of Hillary Clinton and was one of the key voices aimed at bringing the party together. The second role she played, as that clip you played makes clear, she was very much the attack dog of the evening. And in what was, for the most part, a night of positive, uplifting messages by Democrats, she was one of the few people to really hit Donald Trump hard. And this is a role she's taken on with lots of enthusiasm on the campaign trail ever since she endorsed Hillary Clinton. And even before that, she engaged Trump frequently, calling him out on Twitter. And last night, she really let him have it again. Here's a bit more of what she said, linking Trump to what she calls a rigged system.
His whole life has been about taking advantage of that rigged system. Time after time, he preyed on working people, people in debt, people who had fallen on hard times. He's conned them, he's defrauded them, and he's ripped them off. Look at his history. Donald Trump said he was excited for the 2008 housing crash that devastated millions of American families, because he thought it would help him scoop up more real estate on the cheap. Donald Trump set up a fake university to make money by cheating people and taking their life savings.
So that's Elizabeth Warren last night as Hillary Clinton's attack dog on Trump. But Anthony, she also laid out a case for Hillary Clinton last night.
Yeah, she did. And she really offered a sort of populist clinic on what's wrong with America and how to fix it. As you know, Bob, for a long time, Warren has been talking about the hollowing out of the middle class, the burden shouldered by working families, student debt, the rising cost of health care, housing, and a political culture in Washington that she says supports this system. And last night, she made a case that Hillary Clinton really gets that, and that she's a fighter, and that Warren is with her. Here's a bit more what she said.
We believe that oil companies shouldn't call the shots in Washington, that science matters, that climate change is real. Hillary will fight to preserve this earth for our children and grandchildren, and we're with her.
As we said, Anthony, Elizabeth Warren was part of a star-studded evening, a lot of top Democrats speaking, a lot of competition, so to speak, you know, to be the top speaker of the night. How did she do?
Well, I think she did what she had to do. She took on Trump. She offered delegates some red meat. She made the case to Bernie Sanders delegates that the choice in November is pretty clear, either support Clinton or risk sending Donald Trump to the White House. But honestly, Bob, I think she was in a tough spot last night. She followed First Lady Michelle Obama, the star of the evening, who gave what might go down as the best speech of the whole convention, though it's a little early for us to say that. But it was quite a speech. So Warren had a tough act to follow. And she didn't seem as animated as she can be. And during her speech following Michelle Obama, you could sort of feel the air go out of the room. And she also came right before Bernie Sanders, another major focus and big story of the evening. So I think Warren was somewhat sandwiched and maybe swallowed up by the bigger acts of the evening.
Going forward after the convention into the fall and into the fall campaign, I know we're likely to see Warren out on the campaign trail for Hillary Clinton. Where is she going to be deployed, do you think?
Well, the campaign, the Clinton campaign, believes that Warren's populist message plays well among aggrieved working class voters in some of the big swing states, states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, places where Donald Trump's message on trade in particular is particularly appealing to many working class whites. Warren has Midwestern roots. And as she reminded us last night, she has a story of humble origins and a populist message that could appeal to voters in those regions of the country. So she's going to be out there campaigning for the Democratic ticket, rolling toward November.
Finally, Anthony, you covered the Republicans in Cleveland last week. We still have three days to go with the Democrats at their affair in Philadelphia. But at this point, how do these two conventions compare?
Well, it's interesting because in some very fundamental ways, they're very different. The Republican convention was a pretty grim affair. The message coming out of Cleveland was about fear, about terrorism, chaos in the streets, a country in crisis. The Democrats are hoping to come across with a much more hopeful message. And I think last night, particularly Michelle Obama's speech, tapped into that idea of hope. What the two conventions have in common is the theme of unity or lack of party unity. In Cleveland, you know, it was the Ted Cruz phenomenon and the question of whether the party would unite around Trump. Here in Philadelphia, one of the big themes is, will Bernie Sanders' diehard supporters rally around Clinton? We saw a lot of discontent on their part, especially early in the evening last night and early in the day. Last night, Sanders did all he could to try to bring the party together, really doubling down on his endorsement of Clinton and delivering a full-throated speech on her behalf. But we'll have to see if his supporters follow him this week, and that's really one of the big questions going forward.
With 3 days to go, WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks will be in Philadelphia for the rest of the week. Anthony, many thanks this morning.
My pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Different week, different city, different political party. That's the way it is this summer with the back-to-back political conventions in Cleveland last week and Philadelphia this week. If you strip away the politics, the conventions have a few things in common and some key differences. WBUR's Shannon Dooling was in Cleveland with the GOP, is now in Philly with the Democrats, and has this snapshot comparison.
Let's begin with the similarities.
Extremely hot, and actually it's actually hotter on here.
Talia Middleton of Philadelphia is working her family's cheesesteak food truck battling record heat. Just like Cleveland, Philadelphia greeted delegates, media, and politicians with a sweltering first day. And just like at the RNC, the throngs of visitors navigated through a maze of security, chain-link fences, jersey barriers, and metal detectors, as they made their way to, another similarity, a sports arena. Perhaps a more surprising through line of vocal anti-Hillary Clinton sentiment.
Opportunity, equality, or justice. Excuse me.
Here in Philly, that movement was anchored by dedicated Bernie Sanders delegates from around the country who voiced their disapproval on the convention hall floor. Audrey Proctor is one such delegate from Amesbury.
It's tragic that we have two of the most hated candidates that are going to be on the ballot in November.
Which leads us to the most striking similarity between the start of the Democratic and Republican national conventions. A bumpy first night drawing questions of party unity into play. Now, on to the differences. Physical location.
Guys, is the media entrance this way? Still keep going down. Thank you.
The Republican National Convention was in the heart of downtown Cleveland, with the city continually buzzing in the background. Here in Philly, the skyline looms a few miles away from the sea of parking lots surrounding the convention arena. And beyond the obvious differences in policies and platforms, red signs and blue signs, perhaps the most noticeable difference is reflected in the names plastered on Massachusetts delegate chairs.
I am Linda Dorsina-Forey, state senator in Boston.
Stan Rosenberg, state senator.
Mark Pacheco, state senator from the 1st Plymouth and Bristol District.
And Mayor Marty Walsh, Attorney General Maura Healey, two Massachusetts U.S. senators. The list of elected officials goes on and on. In Cleveland, not only were there fewer elected officials, but one of the most popular Republican governors in the country, Charlie Baker, stayed home.
Democrats always come together.
U.S. Senator Ed Markey says that Democrats have always shown up, but that Donald Trump is making it much more of an imperative.
Donald Trump is a uniter and not a divider. Donald Trump is uniting the Democratic Party in a way we have not been united in a generation.
And that gets to a final similarity. In Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, both parties are nominating candidates unlike any other in modern history. And here in Philadelphia, like it was in Cleveland, the whole nation is watching. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Shannon Dooling at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
One of the few people who can really understand what Hillary Clinton is experiencing as she's about to become the Democratic Party's presidential nominee is former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. Dukakis was the party's nominee in 1988 before he lost the election to George Bush. Dukakis will be in Philadelphia later this week for the end of the convention. We caught up with him in his office at Northeastern University, where he teaches, and asked about the leaked emails that show party leaders tried to undermine the campaign of Bernie Sanders.
This is no scandal. It's just something that's dumb. I used to tell my people when I was governor, and I say it to my students here at Northeastern all the time, if you put it in writing, assume it's going to be on the front page of the New York Times, probably above the fold.
What does Hillary Clinton need to do this week to bring the Sanders people who are clearly put out back into her fold?
Well, I've talked to some of our delegates already who are already down there, and they say that they've been talking to Sanders people. In fact, some of them are Sanders people, and they don't think this is going to be a serious obstacle to bringing the party together. I think what they're most pleased with is that a lot of what Senator Sanders was talking about during the campaign is incorporated in the party platform. But as you know, I'm a huge believer in precinct-based grassroots organizing, and I think that's going to be absolutely essential here. I mean, we ought to be able to win this thing. We ought to be able to win the Congress back. But we're not going to do it without a serious 50-state grassroots effort.
And do you see that developing in the Clinton campaign? Do you have concerns?
I'm concerned because time's a wasting. We've got to get going on this as soon as the convention is over.
You were the Democratic nominee 28 years ago this summer. You watched your poll numbers go up, down, et cetera. Since you know the lay of the land, how do you explain Hillary Clinton's very low poll numbers in terms of likability?
I can't quite figure it out myself. I've known her for years. She is a bright, pleasant, nice person. Bill and Hillary Clinton and I were all young governors and young first ladies back when we first were elected. And as you know, he nominated me in Atlanta. So we've been very close for years. She's a great person. She's terrific. Look, she just has to get out there and give people a real sense of who she is. And I think she can do that.
When you ran, the Republican campaign bombarded the air with scare tactic ads. I take it then you expect the same thing out of the Trump campaign facing Hillary Clinton.
It's already begun.
What lessons did you learn that might apply here?
Well, the biggest mistake I made in 1988 was in deciding that I would not respond to the Bush attack campaign. And it was a terrible mistake. I'm a positive guy. I've been in public life because I want to get things done and do good things and make this a better world. But if the other guy is going to come at you with this stuff, as Bush and Roger Ailes, I might add, came after me, you just can't sit there and do nothing. And my failure to do that had a lot to do with my losing.
Is there a danger that Donald Trump is going to be underestimated by the Democratic Party? You think he's going to be a tougher candidate than some Democrats?
I've thought Trump was always going to be a tough candidate. You know, he's using tried and, unfortunately, tested methods of trying to win this thing by trying to convince people that the world is in a state of near collapse, which is nonsense. Good things are happening. We're very close to full employment. Wages are starting to go up again. And this guy's running around telling you that the country's in a state of near collapse and he's the only one who can save it. But that's what candidates do. And I think we have to take him on and take him very, very seriously.
Governor Dukakis, you've been right where Hillary Clinton is right now. What's it like for a candidate to be only days away for the formal nomination for President of the United States?
Well, it's certainly something that doesn't happen to many people. And you certainly are aware of that. On the other hand, remember, you've been campaigning for months and months and months, and most of us who run for the presidency have been in public office for a long time. So it's really not the conclusion of anything. It's really the beginning of something very important. This may sound strange to you, but one of the things that hits you is boredom. I mean, you've been saying the same thing in different ways over and over and over again. And you've been at it for at least a year and a half. And now, wow, we've got another campaign on. So she's got to maintain her edge. She's got to be up. But there's no time to sit around. At the end of the road, the White House is there.
Governor Michael Dukakis, very good to see you again. Thanks a lot for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure.